Don't preach if you don't do it yourself. But we will, Jack. One day we'll find the right place and the right time, and we'll do it.
Soon?
Sooner, not later.
Same with me. Soon. But not Sharon Vea, not her. Want to leave Salvation, right? And leave Wagtrain. Soon.
Okay, Jack. If we can find this mall and its wags. Either way, we'll get out in the next 2 days. That fair?
Yeah, that fair. Thanks for the talk. Go sleep, Ryan. Thanks.
Ryan lay down next to Christy and pulled the blanket over him, checking automatically that both his hand blaster and the G-12 were within easy reach. He closed his eyes, and then he heard Christy's voice.
Yeah, lover. Sooner and not later.
Eventually, Ryan fell asleep. The four sat on their mounts, reins slack, looking at the place that the map had marked. It was a good 10 miles farther into the foothills, but it had certainly once been a major crossing of roads. The pass to the west was closed by a huge earth slip, looking like half a mountain had come crashing down. But the shopping mall wasn't there anymore. Major Ward wiped sweat off his forehead.
At least it was here once. Sign there says so, don't it?
It does.
Rubicon Pass Mall. 20 store units under one roof. Air conditioned throughout. Loads of parking. Open early, open late. Ryan eased himself in the saddle. He wasn't particularly surprised or disappointed. It would have been a miracle if the myth had turned out to be true, and Deathlands was generally low on miracles. It was impossible now to try and deduce the history of the Rubicon Pass Mall. The main outline of the walls was plain enough. So were the piles of rubble that had been the individual stores. Nothing else remained.
Best be heading back to Salvation.
Ryan had known Christy long enough to be sensitive to shades of meaning in her voice. There was something there that really meant she thought they should head back to Salvation.
Feeling?
Might be nothing to it. Just a feeling.
Their horses were tired, making it hard to move along as fast as they all wanted. The nearer they got to Salvation, the more Christy became worried, constantly standing in her stirrups to try and look on ahead. Originally, the plan had been to get to the mythical mall on the first day and then return easily the following day, back to Salvation before sunset on the second day. Now that was shot. The eastern sky was already darkening as the sun began to sink on the opposite horizon. The shadows had lengthened, and they were still a good 15 miles from the ville, with the descent to the plateau to come, and then the ride across the open desert to reach Salvation. Christy held up a hand, bringing them to a halt. Her face was lined with tension, coated in sweat and dust, making her look like a carving of an Aztec goddess.
No good.
Something wrong?
Major Ward irritably waved flies away from his face.
I've got a seriously bad feeling. The Ville's under threat, I'm sure of it.
She looked to Ryan for reassurance.
Skullface?
I don't know, lover. I can't see that kind of detail. You know that, Ryan.
You one of them doomies I heard tell of, Missy?
No, but I can sometimes feel danger. That's what I feel now.
Then I guess we best press on at the best speed we can make.
He squinted up at the cloudless sky.
Looks like we could have us a good moon to travel by. That seemed like a good plan to you, son?
No. We could get caught in the jaws of a trap if we try that.
If there's no moon, we can't risk riding on. If there is a moon, we'll stand out on that flat desert like cow chips on a girl's belly. Heads they win and tails we lose.
Then what?
Fucking easy. Go round. Slower. Coming back.
The Wagmaster looked at Ryan, who smiled.
Jack's right, Major. Only way. We circle to the left, and it'll lead us to cross the blacktop we came in on. That way there's cover all the way to the edge of the ville.
But how long will that take? If the little lady's right, then maybe we should dig the spurs in.
Ryan looked at his wrist chron.
Be there around midnight. Best that way. Knife in the groin shows just as good as a sawed-off in the mouth, Major. We'll do it our way.
They moved on cautiously. During the detour, they could just see the hazy shape of Salvation. Christy thought she could just make out a speckle of lights that could be campfires being lighted for the evening meal. But that didn't mean a thing. Ryan rode in silence, locked into his own thoughts, worrying about the mysterious Skullface and his band of killers. There had been something familiar about the way the inhabitants of Salvation had been mutilated and tortured before enjoying the mercy of death. Something that spoke of a swift and evil nature. It reminded Ryan of something from the past, but his mind wouldn't allow the memory to come forward and be recognized.
Skullface. Fucking Skullface.
Ward had been right about the sky. A cold moon appeared, giving a sharp-edged reality to the landscape. Ryan had been wrong about how long it would take them. The trail that cut up from the plateau toward the road was steeper and rougher than he'd hoped, and the animals were now pushed toward utter exhaustion. JB's mount stumbled and fell, sliding 50 yards down the slope in a tangle of legs, sending rocks and pebbles cascading to the valley floor. The armorer managed to kick his boots clear of the stirrups and step off as the horse went down, avoiding any kind of injury. But it slowed them. It was nearly midnight before they reached the blacktop, at a point less than 3 miles from the vill. An added complication was the sky clouding over, shrouding the moon, reducing visibility from a couple of miles down to barely 100 paces.
Hey, everybody, let's stop a second.
What was that, Ryan?
These horses are totally done, Ward. Better we leave them here. Stops the risks of another fall, or one of them making a noise when it scents the other animals.
Sounds good to me.
They all dismounted and tied the animals to a lone mesquite bush. Christy rubbed the small of her back and tried to stretch the stiffness away.
If there'd been trouble, wouldn't we have heard something?
Most of the time, we were way too far off from the vill to hear anything short of a nuke grin going off.
As they left the horses, one of them started to nicker, tossing its head back, showing its teeth.
Calm down, Nellie.
For a moment, Ryan thought he was going to have to put a bullet through its head, using the built-in baffle silencer in his hand blaster. But Jack went and gentled the animal, standing in close and blowing into its nostrils.
Good girl. Good girl.
Ryan holstered the Sig Sauer.
That's a good trick, Jack.
Christina told me about it.
The Ballinger woman?
Yeah.
They started walking toward Salvation. Ryan was regretting the way he'd ridden off on this fool's errand without giving enough thought to the defense of the vill. Doc had the stoutest heart of any man Ryan had ever met, but that didn't mean that he was a great tactician in a firefight. Similarly, everything Ryan had seen of Mildred made him trust both her intellect and her courage. But to have her trying to hold off this Skullface and his band was too much. He should have stayed himself, or at least he should have asked JB to remain behind. The armorer was at his side.
Know what you're thinking, Ryan.
What, JB?
I should have stayed. Or you.
Yeah. Damn right.
Maybe not. If they'd come at us in a big firefight, we could still have gone under. If Christie's right, and there's been real trouble, then it could be that you and me outside are a better bet.
It was true, and it reassured Ryan until they breasted the rise and looked down into Salvation. The moon had reappeared, and they could see the vill clearly. See everything. The armed men, the train standing quietly on the edge of town. Then it came to Ryan.
Fireblast. Skullface. I know who he is.
The first day that Ryan and the others were away from Salvation was fairly uneventful. The liveliest moment had been a baptizing in the narrow creek that flowed past the edge of the vill. The oldest son of one of the coterie of preachers, named John Ridley, was in his early 20s and weighed in around 320 pounds. It had been obvious to everyone on the train that he lusted after Sharon Vair, following her like an overheated dog looking for a patch of shade. During the morning, he'd gone into convulsions and begun to speak in tongues. At least, that's what his father claimed the garbled jabbering was. Mildred, pointing out loudly that she was a qualified doctor, knelt by the thrashing, sweating hulk and slapped him across the face, sharply enough to snap his head to the side. Ridley immediately opened his eyes, flushing in anger at seeing who'd hit him.
Oh, the bitch slapped me, Pa!
I think the fit's over.
Mildred stood up and walked calmly away. But the settlers took it as a sign, and the young man was put down for an evening baptism. It was all that Doc could do to persuade Elder Vair that they should still keep a watch out during the ceremony. One of the younger children had claimed to have seen a man standing on a ridge of rock behind the vill during the late afternoon. She said she'd seen the shine of the fading sun, of something that glittered.
Like field glasses.
Other than three reluctant sentries, every single member of the wag train, from youngest to oldest, lined the banks of the river. John Ridley was dressed in a long white shirt that came down almost as far as his knees. He was visibly embarrassed at being the center of attention, and his eyes kept turning toward Sharon Vair, who studiously ignored him. Elder Bear stood by the side of the vast young man.
Hey, Doc, it looks like that bit in Shakespeare about the sow that hath o'erwhelmed all her litter but one.